The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bratbol, Judge Johnson, Judge Riley, the Honorable Diane B. Bratbol presiding.
And today's date for the record, I thought I lost everybody. Today's date for the record is June 23rd, 2021. Welcome again to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We have four matters on our calendar today. Two of those are oral. The lawyers for the first matter I see are before us. I don't think I asked the marshal to call the first case, so I'll do that. And then again, I'll just have a couple of remarks. So please proceed, Marshal.
We're hearing the case of A201578, Timothy Sobolewski individually and as personal representative of the estate of Frank Sobolewski versus Barbara Louise Casibo, personal representative.
Right. And we are obviously appearing by Zoom today. I'll just note that really our procedures remain the same as always, and that includes that no recordings of these proceedings are allowed. The court is making an audio recording that will be posted and available on our website. If you have any questions about our procedures, please ask, but really they are the same as otherwise in our courtroom. And as to counsel, and before you begin your remarks, I'm sure you're familiar with our procedures, but before you start, please identify yourself for the record, as well as the client you represent. And then the clock should be visible on your screen. So you want to watch the 15 minutes as it counts down for each of you, and then appellant, if you choose, you've got 5 minutes for rebuttal. So with that, I think we're ready to proceed. And counsel for appellant, Mr. Nelson, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't know whether I should stand up. Maybe I will. No, I think I'll just sit down because I'd have to adjust my screen if I did. Is it okay if I remain seated?
It is okay. Yes. All right. Ahead.
Well, this is a case, Your Honor, that actually I've lived for many years. I've known Frank Sobolewski since 1973, which is when I was starting to practice law. And I have been involved in this matter from the start, from that standpoint. Frank and Renee Sobolewski were married in 1973, and each had children of a prior relationship. Frank owned, fee simple, a cabin on the Platte of Gold Shores, which is in Coochin County, and it's on the shore of Rainy Lake. I think it's important to set this out because it is that cabin and that property that really is the gravamen of what we have here today. This case involves a lot of issues. First, it involves two probates. Renee died, the probate was started. Frank died 16 days later by his own hand, and that probate is also going on. When we got to court before Judge Larson, the probates were consolidated and they were handled together. Some of the evidence was the same in both cases, so it made sense to handle both probates together. However, at that time, we also had a civil action for damages, and the damages are based on the allegation that there was an agreement between these parties to provide for their respective heirs. I'll discuss more details of that agreement as I go forward, but that case was deferred, and it was deferred in front of the probate judge by agreement of all the parties. We decided that we would handle the probate issues because the probate issues really had bearing on the civil case. It had bearing because, number one, we had to determine whether there was a valid prenuptial agreement. And number two, we had to determine whether a document that was submitted by Renee Sobolewski's personal representative was in fact a codicil changing her will. The whole gravamen of this case is that the parties agreed and had an agreement as early as 2001 that they were going to take care of their respective heirs. Now, they were initially married in 73. They were divorced roughly 20 years later. They were remarried again in a subsequent time. But during those 11 years when they were not married, Frank had this property that he had free and clear that was his non-marital property. He ended up, in the course of the divorce in 93, he ended up in the course of the divorce deeding this property to Renee, reserving a life estate. Now, this was the quickest divorce, I think, that I've ever seen. 29 days from service of the summons and petition to actual judge signing the decree. No lawyers involved, Frank and Renee only. Renee was preparing the documentation, apparently, submitting it to Judge Hempstead. He signed the divorce decree 29 days after it was started. But in that divorce decree, Renee received a deed as a result of that for the fee interest in the Gold Shores property. Some years later, she went to the county recorder. She recorded a document in 2001. That document said that she was going to grant an undivided one-half interest in that Gold Shores property to Frank Soboleski's heirs. She had second thoughts. She went in a year later, about 16 to 18 months later, and she withdrew that, and she said in that document, also filed, also contained in my brief, that she reconsidered, but they were making other provisions for Frank Soboleski's heirs. Frank Soboleski's heirs, three boys and a daughter, fifth child that apparently is deceased.
Mr. Nelson, I have a question for you.
Absolutely.
I couldn't find anywhere in the record that, and I'll just call them by their first name, Frank's estate filed a claim, a notice of claim against Renee's estate. Can you point me to the record evidence of that?
Yes, I can. And it's set forth in my brief. The claim was filed within the four-month period.
I'm wondering if you are considering the objection that was filed in August.
It was
the claim. Is that, are you, okay, so you think that the objection that you filed stands in as a claim?
I believe it does. And because the claim surrounds Renee's will, that was changed.
Well, I think under the statute, when you file a claim, it has to be fairly specific about what you're claiming. And so I'm trying to see where the specific details are and what claim you filed against her estate.
The claim was to bar or to remove the document which was presented as a codicil. It wasn't identified as a codicil. It wasn't identified as an amendment to the will. It was just a reproduction of a page of the will that was changed to provide that the Gold Shores property would not go to the Frank Soboleski's heirs, but would go to Renee's heirs. Complete turnabout. The entire document consisted of a page that was submitted after Renee's death. And actually, our case didn't mature until the judge, this case we're talking about now, the civil case, didn't mature until Judge Larson acknowledged the codicil as, acknowledged the amended page as a codicil, thereby changing Renee Soboleski's will.
I have another question for you.
Certainly.
And I'm looking at the complaint in your civil lawsuit. Not the amended, because that the judge, that's a different issue, whether or not the judge abused its discretion when it didn't grant that. But the complaint that you served and filed says that Renee unilaterally breached the prenuptial agreement. And so, is that the breach of contract that you are claiming, or it seems to be the breach of contract that you're claiming in your lawsuit, your civil claim?
Originally, that was the breach. it was a breach because the prenuptial agreement provided in paragraph 19, if I recall correctly, the parties would act in a fiduciary capacity one with the other. The change of the understanding and the will that was filed in January of 2012, which set forth what their agreement was relative to their respective heirs, they're changing that unilaterally in the second page or the amended page, later described as the codicil, is what took away what the plan was to provide for the Sobolewski heirs. And so it was that document that was critical. It's that document that we contested in the probate, and it was that document that, when allowed, brought us to this case. There was a prenuptial agreement. We didn't know whether the prenup was valid or not. That was later decided by the probate court to be valid. So we have the prenup.
I apologize. Could I please continue?
I have one last question. So then, if the probate court decided that the prenuptial agreement was valid, how does your new complaint survive?
Well, the new complaint survives because the prenuptial agreement, the provision that we're relying on in the prenuptial agreement, is the fact that the parties had a special duty one to the other. Up to this point in time, the prenup, well, they had a duty to be fair and honest, but the prenup specifically underscored that, because they agreed at the prenup agreement in 2008, before they remarried, that they would treat each other in a fiduciary capacity. They'd be honest, they'd be straightforward, they'd look out for one another. All the things that are included in a fiduciary. That's important in this case, because what we're dealing with is this conduct which has been identified by judges on more than one occasion as being sly and surreptitious. The conduct of Renee, who changed her mind and decided, wait a minute, I'm going to take care of my daughters. I'm not going to participate in taking care of Frank Sobolewski's boys. Notwithstanding the fact that I received his non-marital property, as a result of the divorce, I'm not doing it. She changed her mind. And I think the probate court is important because, number one, the decision of the probate court established the fact that this amended page was, in fact, a codicil. Because if that amended page hadn't been accepted as a codicil, Renee's assets, which included the Gold Shores property, would have been divided. It would have paid off the mortgage against the Park Avenue property. The balance would have been awarded to or devised to the heirs of Frank Sobolewski. We wouldn't be here. So it was the probate court's acknowledgement of that codicil that changed Renee's will. Renee's will really is important only because it underscores what the agreement was between Frank and Renee.
Mr. Nelson, are you arguing to us that our court's earlier opinion was erroneous?
No, I'm not. I'm not arguing that your earlier opinion is erroneous, because we rely on that earlier opinion. We rely on the opinion that established the fact, that underscored the fact that the prenup was valid, underscored the fact that the codicil was valid, and that Renee's will had been changed. Now, did Renee have a right to do it? Well, she did have the right to do it. She had the right to do a codicil. I mean, that was the whole issue. Did she have the right to change her will? She did have the right to change her will. But when she changed her will, she was breaching the contract and the agreement that she and Frank had as early as 2001.
You have just a couple of minutes left, and I feel like you haven't yet spoken directly to the district court's reasons for its order. And I think there are two. One is that the claim was too late under the probate code, and second, res judicata. I mean, why was the district court in error in those two reasons?
Well, it wasn't too late on the probate code, because we identified the claim when we filed our notice in August. And it was a couple months after the probate case was opened. We identified it. The case law is, in fact, the statute provides, you don't have to detail it. You have to give notice of it. And we did. I mean, there's some latitude here as the facts fell in place. Number two, the probate court identified for us the terms of the prenuptial agreement. I don't think the probate court allowed our claim, not because we didn't file it timely, but also you have to consider that our claim really didn't mature until the codicil was allowed. When the codicil was allowed, our claim matured for damages. They had an agreement. The agreement went back to 2001. It was repeated. It was deftly stated by Renee in her will. It was referred to in Frank's will. The plan was, and the plan that was identified, was that the heirs would receive a proportion of the party's estates, and the Sobolewski boys would receive the Gold Shores property. Renee's heirs would receive the Park Avenue property. There would be an adjustment with the mortgage being paid off. Both sets of heirs would come out about E. That was a great agreement. Renee breached that agreement, and the breach triggers the damages.
So they, you served the complaint in this action in, I believe, December of 17, and was the case assigned to the same judge who presided over the probate case? And I'm wondering if there was, you know, much active litigation in this separate action before this court's opinion affirming the probate court.
No, Judge Larson was the judge that was the probate judge. I believe Judge Dean was the judge that dismissed the action subsequently. And my briefing relative to that motion included in the documents, and as well as my brief in the Court of Appeals action. We've actually had four judges involved in this matter, largely because of circumstances here in Cochise County. Even Judge LeDuc was involved in setting up the trust where the property, the Gold Shores property, was ultimately sold. The parties agreed that the proceeds would be placed in trust and held pending the outcome of this litigation.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Mr. Judge Johnson, did you have any follow-up questions? Or okay. And of course, Mr. Nelson, you will have 5 minutes for a rebuttal, so you'll have a chance to have the closing word.
I understand.
So with that, Mr. Sharmone, I think we're ready to hear from you as counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Steve Sharmone. I represent the respondents in this matter. This is a fairly straightforward case. This is a claim against the estate of Renee Sobolewski. The complaint itself is against, names as a defendant, Renee Sobolewski and her estate through her personal representative, Barbara Cassebo. Judge Dean correctly acted, I believe. This was untimely for two reasons. One, there never was a notice of claim filed within the 4 months as required by statute. And secondly, this lawsuit was not filed within that period. They could have proceeded with this even without a notice of claim if they had served and filed the lawsuit within that 4 month period. But as Judge Dean points out in his decision, that was not filed until almost 2 months after the time period had expired.
Mr. Sharmone, how do you respond to Mr. Nelson's assertion that the objection that they've timely filed in Renee's probate case serves as the claim against the estate?
My response, Your Honor, is that that's a new argument that he's making for the first time to the Court of Appeals. In our hearing before Judge Dean, and you have a transcript of that, Most of that transcript is related to arguments in the Frank Sobolewski estate with regard to replacing the personal representative. But those portions that do apply to the motion for summary judgment, not once does Mr. Nelson ever even hint to Judge Dean, either in his oral arguments or in his motions and responses to our motion for summary judgment, that somehow that objection was a notice of claim. And in his documents filed with the Court of Appeals, he keeps saying that he's filed a notice of claim. In some areas, he says it was done on August 25th. In some places, he said it was August 28th. And in his statement of facts, he talks about the objection to the probate. And then in the next paragraph, he talks about a notice of claim, but he doesn't attach a copy of a notice of claim. He doesn't refer to a document. And I submit the reason for that is that none exists. The other thing is, if you look at the objection, nowhere in that objection does it talk about potential damages that would be owed to the heirs of Frank Sobolewski. Nowhere does it mention the word claim. They're merely objecting to the change that Renee Sobolewski made to her will, the one-page change that the trial court, Judge Larson, found to be a codicil. Judge Larson also found that the prenuptial agreement was valid, but the change in the will did not breach the prenuptial agreement. And that's the basis for the lawsuit. When it was brought after the deadline, it claims this breach of contract. Now he's, in his amended complaint, he adds this breach of fiduciary responsibility, but he's just trying to get back into court on things that could have certainly been brought in his original pleadings, his original complaint. And also, he seems all over the place in his arguments. And in his filings with the Court of Appeals, he claims the civil action was served and filed on August 3rd, 2018. That's totally wrong. It was served and filed months earlier on December 21st, 2017, and it was answered in early January of 2018 by the respondents herein. Clearly, we wouldn't be answering something that was served, not until 4 months later. And so there's just a number of misstatements and errors that are in those.
Mr. Shimon, if I could, again, just to get the benefit of your thinking about Mr. Nelson's argument, he says that the objection that was filed to the probate really tested what were the valid documents in this case. Was the codicil valid? Was it in breach of the prenuptial agreement? And that once those determinations were made, then his client could move ahead with a civil suit. So how does that factor into your analysis of timeliness?
Well, he could have moved ahead with that civil suit before those were ever determined, and actually he did. In December of 2017, he serves the original complaint. We had the trial the following August in the probate court. So he served and filed his complaint way before the probate court made any determination about the validity of the codicil and the prenuptial agreement. And in our answer to his complaint, we state that this is really a claim against the estate. These issues should be determined in the probate court. In response to our answer, these issues were never raised in front of Judge Larson. He talks about some agreement to postpone the civil case. Judge Larson never addressed the civil case. Judge Larson was never, to my understanding, was never assigned the civil case. Judge LaDuke was originally the judge assigned to the civil case because of health reasons. I think Judge Aduke probably originally had both cases. Because of health reasons, Judge Larson handled the trial and the probate case. And because of health reasons, Judge Aduke, Judge Dean was assigned as a substitute judge on the civil case. By the time that the probate trial and the appeal on the probate case had all been resolved. And even if this had been filed timely, it would have been unsuccessful, because the whole basis is that somehow there was a breach of the prenuptial agreement by the change in the codicil. But Judge Larson and the Court of Appeals in the first case both determined that this Gold Shores property, which is the property at issue, and that was premarital property of Renee Sobolewski. As such, she had full authority and ability to do whatever she wanted to with regard to that property, and she did. She changed the will so that it went to her children. And what Frank Sobolewski had as his premarital property was the life estate. And he had that. He had full control. I mean, at the time Renee Sobolewski died, she had the fee in the property, but not the life estate. So her access to the property was through her husband, Frank. And in the Court of Appeals and Judge Larson's decision, she had the right to deal with it. And her changing of the will, the new page, didn't breach the prenuptial agreement. And so without that breach, if there's no breach of the prenuptial agreement, there can be no award of damages. But all of those things, portions of them were alleged in the original complaint. I think really the only thing that he tries to add in the amended complaint is this fiduciary responsibility and some breach of fiduciary responsibility or some violation of a plan. And Mr. Nelson keeps throughout this process in the earlier Court of Appeals proceeding as well. He keeps arguing facts, not in evidence. There was never any evidence in the probate trial about the values of the respective properties and that some person's children were supposed to get a comparable amount. Those things never arose. There was not testimony on that. That was not considered. He argues that he should have a right to a trial on damages. Well, you only get to damages if you can establish some cause of action. Neither in his original complaint or the attempted amendment does he establish a cause of action. So you don't, and as the Court of Appeals said in the first appeal on the probate case, they don't reach the issue of damages because there hasn't been a violation of the prenup. And so we keep rehashing the same things over and over, but there are no material issues of fact or law. And I would submit that Judge Dean properly granted summary judgment. And Mr. Nelson's making arguments to this Court of Appeals now that were never mentioned to Judge Dean. I have nothing further unless there's questions, Your Honor.
Sounds like the panel has nothing further. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Shimon. I think with that, well, now we've reset the clock. So, Mr. Nelson, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Shimon has really misunderstood what our claim is. And I think the claim is set out very clearly in our amended complaint. The amended complaint should be freely allowed. My experience has been generally they are.
Nelson, let me ask you a question about that, the judge's decision not to allow your amendment. So if the district court determined that your complaint was untimely, so you'll have to help me understand how a motion to amend should be granted to an untimely asserted claim in your complaint. So, or is it that we have to agree with you that your original complaint wasn't untimely, and then the motion to amend should have been allowed.
Well, the whole case turns on the codicil. And without the codicil, everybody would have been happy. The codicil changed the ball game. And the codicil was drafted by Renee. And it was held in secret. She pledged her children to secrecy. She didn't want anybody to know that less than a year after her will was signed in 2012, that she had a codicil to change it. And so that's the point of this case, that she went back on what appeared to be the plan. Court of Appeals, but the probate judge found that there was an apparent plan between the parties to provide for their respective heirs. That is the contract. Now, Mr. Shimon says the prenup wasn't breached. Well, it may have been in the fiduciary aspect, but the long and short of it is, it's not the prenup that brings us here before the court. The contract that brings us before this court is a contract that Renee and Frank had throughout the years to provide for their respective heirs. And Renee is the one that set it out in writing, in detail, in her will. That was the plan. She changed that plan. And it was her surreptitious change of that plan that brings us here today. Now, we notified the court that we were challenging the codicil. The judge allowed it. It wasn't a breach of the prenuptial agreement. The prenuptial agreement was only the fact that the parties attempted to go forward with an understanding they were going to treat each other fairly. It wasn't anything in the prenup that prevented them to do wills. They did wills. They did wills together in 2012, some 4 years after they were married. But those wills were dovetailed one to the other. Frank didn't understand that he only had a life estate. I mean, when you look at his will, he was bequeathing his will to his children, and he was bequeathing in that life estate that obviously terminated at his death. He didn't understand that. I don't know if we have to make a finding on whether he understood it or not, but we do know that they had a plan. And the fact that Renee was so concerned that somebody might spill the beans that she had changed that plan indicates to me that she understood. Renee understood they had a plan. She and Frank had a plan. Renee understood it. Renee understood that she was bequeathing that Gold Shores property to Frank's heirs. Frank understood that. He was okay with it. She didn't want anybody to find out. And the testimony of her daughter was that she was fearful for her life. Now, I think that was a stretch of what the situation was. No evidence that Frank, even though he was a decorated war hero, was at all violent in any way. But Renee knew that she had done wrong. And it's that guilt that she bore up to her death that solidifies the fact that there was a plan between Renee and Frank to take care of their children. And Renee breached that plan.
Nelson, I'll just point out that you're in the last 10 seconds of your rebuttal time. And so if you'd like to sum up the basis on which you seek reversal, we would appreciate that.
Okay. The basis is simply this. We need our day in court. We need our day in court. Summary judgment. There's evidence here that the plan can be flushed out. The action can be held. Damages can be determined. And we're not talking about insignificant damages. We're talking about $400,000 worth of damages. That's what the difference is in this case.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Nelson, Mr. Shimon. We very much appreciate the arguments that we've heard today. We find it very helpful.